You are listening to 1440 in Fort Worth, Texas. For more information, visit 1440.com.
Well, as you see in that video, everybody has a story. And when I first saw that, it kind of shook me because I started to realize that a lot of us focus on our own stories and how it's going to happen, how to write it, how it's going to finish, but we don't pay attention to other people's stories. And then when we do take time to look at someone else's story, half the time we judge the book by its cover. So we don't even give someone a chance to read their story, to find out about them before we have already judged them. And so when I was praying about what to talk about tonight, I really want to talk about a few different stories that I think all of us can fit into. Last week in family service, we had a mini bully seminar. And so a lot of time was spent on talking about what is bullying, the victim, and then observers. And so there's a lot of practical information given, and I noticed there weren't a lot of students, youth students there last week. And so tonight I'm going to kind of review a few of those things, but we're going to go deeper into the word where three stories are concerned. I'm going to talk to you about the bully, the victim, and the observer. And so tonight we're going to be getting into the word and kind of seeing those stories. But it's not just about what are these people and how do they function, but it's getting out of our own perspective of how we would normally judge someone and put ourselves in their shoes. So we don't have a slide yet. I'll go ahead and read it to you. The first type of person I want to talk about is the bully. Bully is defined as a repeated aggressive behavior that's intentionally meant to hurt somebody, physically or mentally. Bullying is characterized by an individual behaving in a certain way to gain power over another person. So, in other words, it's intimidation, it's trying to gain control, but it's not through positive means, it's through negative ways of gaining attention and control. And so bullying involves three things. It's an imbalance of power. So it's someone saying, I'm more dominant than you. I have a power and I'm going to exude it on you so that you feel lower than I do, and then that way I feel better about myself. This can be done through use of fear. It can be manipulation, even status. Like you just look at the rank and say, I'm better than you just because of this. Or I want that, so I'm going to get it any way I can. Bullying also involves an intent to cause harm. Some people would say, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to pick on you. And that isn't bullying. Bullying is, I have a motive, and the motive is to hurt you or to get what I want at whatever cost. And so that's the main concept behind bullying, is that it's the intent to cause harm. It's a heart issue inside someone. And then repetition. It's happening over and over and over again. So when we talk about some of these things tonight of what bully is, and I say teasing or picking on, I know we've probably teased someone before and we've picked on someone. I'm not calling you a bully. I'm just saying that those are the types of things that happen. And once we look at the heart of the issue and repetition, that's what those things look like. So just so you guys kind of have that preface when we address these things, that those are what would classify a bully as someone who does it repeatedly, someone who does it with the intent to hurt, and someone who does it to gain power. Bullying can take many forms, and so these are some of the things I talked about last week. I wanted to give you a foundation. If you already heard it, just hear it again. The first type of bullying is verbal. So it's your words. It's name-calling, teasing, saying whatever comes to mind without a filter. It's your words being used as a weapon towards someone else. And so that's verbal bullying. Social bullying is spreading of rumors, leaving people out on purpose, like excluding someone from a crowd with the intent to make them alienated. It's breaking up friendships. It's gossiping or talking about someone on purpose or not including someone on purpose. It's even just making someone feel uncomfortable or scared. So just being in someone's presence and not giving them that respect, not giving them that attention. People, have you ever sensed like, I'm not wanted in this circle right now? That's a way of having social bullying, is just giving that aura of, why are you here? That in and of itself, you don't have to say anything. You can communicate through nonverbal communication and people can get your message. Another kind is physical, which is probably the most popular kind you hear about because it's easy to identify someone hitting someone. It's pretty obvious if there's a fight in the halls or if there's someone being teased, but it's hitting and punching. It can be kicking. It can be a physical threat to someone, like saying you're going to do something and almost doing it. You know, like if someone's going to threaten it, if you're going to go over the cliff, they won't quite drop you, but they're going to make you think they're going to drop you. And it can also be just damaging property, vandalizing something. So it doesn't necessarily have to be towards a person. It could be towards their personal effects. And then the other one, which is becoming increasingly popular, and you guys probably know something about, is cyberbullying. This is on the internet. With Facebook and social media, it's a lot easier for someone to be in their room typing something out and saying whatever they want because they don't have the people that they're talking to in front of them. They don't have to necessarily be responsible for what they're about to say because they're hiding in the safety of their walls. They're hiding behind that computer screen. And so you can get on there. You can see statuses. I mean, people don't even just message these things in private. They just blast it on someone's wall or someone's page. And that's cyberbullying with the intent to cause harm to someone, to intimidate them, to hurt them through those means. And so those are some of the main ones that we'll talk about tonight. But a lot of times when I've heard about bullying, it seems to be limited to schools. I've noticed that we hear about it a lot through school assemblies or even last week when it was referenced. Where does this happen? The baseball park, the bathroom, in the parking lot. But it's all centered around schools. And so I know some of you are homeschooled. Some of you go to private school, public school. I don't believe bullying is limited to a school. I believe in society, adults. It's not limited to high school and under. It is the issue of a heart of someone who's out to get someone else or who's trying to cover up their own insecurities by hurting someone else. And so if I'm talking and you're like, I don't go to public school, that doesn't happen at my school. I witnessed something in the parking lot at Albertsons the other day, and it had nothing to do with me. I was just observing it, and I'll tell you a little bit about it later. But I realized that it affects me too. Just because I don't go to school, I work at a church in a Christian environment, and I'm so thankful for that. But I'm not exempt from what goes on in my community, and I'm not exempt from doing something about it. And so when you're listening tonight, listen through the filter of that doesn't involve me, because most of you have siblings too. So even if you're homeschooled, you might have a sibling, and siblings can bully each other. I had a brother, and we weren't allowed to be ugly. And you're like, not allowed to be ugly. We were best friends growing up. But I had other friends, and it just did not work out. And there was some intense fighting going on. And so this isn't just limited to your school. It's not just limited to friends or strangers. It can be just as close as the person you share a bedroom with. So I just wanted to kind of lay that out there for you guys. So when we're talking, don't just say, oh, this doesn't pertain to me, because it could be something where the Lord has you in a certain place in public to help encourage someone else or to help break something up. And so this is for all of us to hear tonight, and I believe it's an important message for us. I wanted to give a real quick personal example. When I was reading some of these things, how many of you have said, I've teased someone, I've joking, maybe not hit someone on purpose, but jokingly teased someone, punched them, even said a few mean words. I've seen like 5 hands, so you guys are all like, sweet little angels, is that what I'm getting at here? Yeah? Okay, that's good. So then you guys have maybe seen someone picked on, teased, hit. Can you identify? Okay, a few more of you. I got it. Okay. Well, when I was reading this, I'll be transparent here. I have 3 roommates, and we're all in our 20s. Not me. She's in her 30s. We pick on each other. Actually, I'm the one that gets picked on a lot. And I bring it on myself. I'll give them that. I do silly things, and suddenly the video camera's out, and it's being uploaded and edited on their software, ready to go on YouTube at any moment that they threaten. But I get picked on, and so I realize that I fight back too. So then I'll be like, oh yeah? Well then watch this. And then I come back at them. We're joking, and we're teasing, but at the same time, there's something there that underneath I was like, why are they always picking on me? Like, can't they just laugh at it and not pick on me? And so it comes to a point where we confront it. So it's not this big sit-down family meeting. Okay, I feel like I'm a victim. I need you to stop. But I'm realizing even within your home, and some of you are identifying with this, that there's some things that go on. So it's not necessarily they have the intent to harm me and they want to hurt me. But sometimes we are unaware of how our words come across, how our actions come across. They're videoing it because they think they're funny. And some of them I think I could probably be top of the YouTube list for some of the videos. I haven't released them all yet, and you guys might be the first to see some of them, but I realized too in myself that I egg it on. And so sometimes I'm like, why are you picking on me? And I'm thinking, well, why did you just say that to them? Like, you're just setting yourself up. And so when we're talking about bullying, instead of always throwing it back at the other person, you're mean, you're picking on me, what am I doing to encourage it? Am I encouraging it? Or have I told them that I don't like it? Because maybe they think it's funny because I am laughing, but they don't really realize that it's hurting me. And so a lot of these things can just be stopped by simple communication, being honest, and also looking at ourselves first instead of always pointing the blame and finger at someone else. Does that make sense? A little bit? Let's turn to Psalms 139:23. It says, let me see. I have a big Bible. It takes a while to get there sometimes. 139:23. Search me, O God, and know my heart. Test me and know my thoughts. Point out anything in me that offends you and lead me along the path of everlasting life. And so this isn't just something that a bully needs to do. This is something we all need to do on a regular basis. We need to look inside and say, Lord, what is there anything in me that you want to purge, to clean out, to get rid of? Is there something you want to correct and just tweak a little bit? What are those things that I need to adjust in my life so that I can be a reflection of you? Because it says if we're his image on earth, people are looking at us, and the goal would be for them to see the Father. So if they're looking at us and they're not seeing the Father, then there's probably some things we need to do by looking in the mirror to kind of change that appearance. If you're going for a look, like, who's ever dressed up for a costume party before? Anybody ever dressed up or been in a play so you become another character? You have a picture, you have an image of what you're going for, you look in the mirror and you're like, that's not quite it. You make a few adjustments because you have an image and you're trying to become that image. And so just like this, we have an image, this whole thing, whoa, and there goes Genesis. Okay, this whole thing is written for us to know who our Father is and how he acted so that we can become more like him. So then if we have this image, we're saying, Lord, search me, know my thoughts, and point out what offends you to keep me on this path. And so he's right there ready to talk to us, ready to show us those things, but it starts with us saying, is there anything in me, before we start pointing fingers at, well, that's a bully. It's like, well, I just picked on my brother and pushed him into his bedroom or pretended to pillow fight him but smothered his face with a pillow. I mean, all these things aren't fun, but we start to play victim when we realize we're actually being a bully to someone else. So before we go further, it's, Lord, search me. What's going on inside of myself? Show me what I can do to be more like you. And as we want to become more like him, as our heart is sensitive and genuine towards him, then our actions are going to change. It doesn't have to be this, don't do that. No, don't do that. Oh my gosh, I can't believe I did that again. As you focus more on the positive, what I'm becoming more like, you're not focusing on what not to be, because it's just not going to happen, because it's a natural response to become what you're looking at. And this isn't to bring guilt on anyone or to say, you're a bully and you better stop, but it's just saying, let's look inside ourselves before we start pointing to a bunch of other people and playing the blame game, because it's as simple as repent and change your ways. It's not this long, drawn-out process where now we're going to spend the next 30 minutes talking about how to fix our bad attitude or fix that action we did the other day. It's awareness and then turning from it. And so it's as simple as that. And so when we talk about these things, it's just a correction. It's not this blown out of proportion thing where I'm saying now we all have to do repent and make this big deal about it. But it's a simple process to just say, Lord, search me, reveal it to me, and guide me how to change it. And it's that quick. So there's no guilt here. If there's something in your mind, you're like, oh, I shouldn't have done that. I drove on the way here and I was picking on my little brother at school today. I gossiped about somebody. Just say, Lord, bring it to my remembrance. As soon as he does, repent and turn, and it's done. It's not something you mull over. Today in staff chapel, Kenneth Copeland was talking, and he was talking about sin consciousness. And so many times people are thinking, I shouldn't have done that. And oh, I did that in my past, and I can't believe I did that. And he's like, God does not care about what you did yesterday. You repent today, and you move on. Like, all things work together for good. So instead of dwelling on yesterday, and when I've talked a couple weeks ago about looking in the rearview mirror, you're not going forward if you're looking backwards. And so he's just saying, I brought it to remembrance. As soon as you hear it, make a decision, change it, and move on. And so that's what we're doing here, is just saying, Lord, bring it to my remembrance, and it's a quick 30-second thing. And so this isn't to bring guilt and condemnation. It's just it's a good habit to get in, to when you wake up in the morning, to acknowledge God first, and when you go to bed at night, just leaving that clean slate and saying, Lord, show me throughout my day what I can do better tomorrow. And so it's a refreshing thing. It's a positive thing. It's something that helps keep us on that right track. Turn to Matthew 7:21. This is kind of a law of reaping and sowing. It says, do for others what you would like them to do for you. This is the summary of all that is taught in the law and the prophets. Now, this is probably the most popular thing even in society, called the golden rule. Do to someone what you want done to you. But we can even apply it to our words. Say to someone what you want said to you. And sometimes we hear this often and repeated, and even not in a scriptural sense, that we kind of just brush it aside and don't think about it. But I realize that if I'm complaining about something that I want to see change, like someone picked on me or someone cheated on a test, and that's not fair because their grade was better than mine, but then I'm over here doing something else wrong that's affecting someone else, it's kind of hypocritical to complain about how someone else is treating you when you're kind of reciprocating to the very next person. And so when we hear this golden rule, it's not just like do good to someone so that they do good to you, but it's to be aware if you've done something wrong towards someone so you can correct it and not have it continue on. As I was reading that scripture, I kind of thought of a change of perspective. You may or may not have heard this before, but hurt people hurt people. And you're like, huh? If you add another word, hurt people will hurt people. And so when we look at a bully, a lot of times we're like, that's a punk. He has a bad attitude and he needs an adjustment, or that dude's scary. And we just size him up real fast, sum him up as an angry person, they're bad, and I will have nothing to do with them. But I started to think, if hurt people hurt people, then the person that's hurting someone probably has something going on that they need to be dealt with. They probably don't have the love that they need. They probably have been rejected before, so now their natural reaction is to reject someone else. And so I'm not defending the bully, but I am saying that a lot of times we watch out for that victim, or we watch out for ourselves, but we don't take into account that maybe the bully needs a friend, or maybe he needs someone to smile at him in the face of danger, you know, like, okay, I don't want to get you upset. But being led by the Holy Spirit to be around those people, whether in the store, have you ever been to the store and the person checking you out just has a bad attitude, and you're like, what is your problem? If I react to them, like, rudely, like, how dare you talk to me like that, or you go to customer service, I've thought about a customer service. Those people deal with a lot of junk, and it's really not their problem that game you bought doesn't work. They're just paid to receive it back from you, tell you they're sorry, and give you your money back, or say, I'm sorry, I can't. But they get so much flack. They get so much attitude, and it's not even their fault. But a lot of times, the person who has the problem then fires back at that person, and all of a sudden you realize those customer service people aren't so customer service friendly, because they've, for the last 8.5 hours, have dealt with people yelling at them all day that around 9 o'clock at night, they're just not real happy. But what if we switched that and was like, you know what, they're having a bad day. What can I do to make it a better day? When Drew was up here a couple weeks ago just talking about his position and how people, you know, come across, I'm like, why are you happy? It's a choice. If he jammed his finger back there unpacking boxes, he could just be really upset and just kind of take it out on people. But it's not really going to do any different if he's given someone a bad attitude, because they had nothing to do with that. And so a lot of times we react out of something that's already happened to us. And so I just want to encourage you guys that sometimes we're going to be around people and they're not always going to be pretty nice to us. They're not going to be positive. They're not going to be encouraging, but that doesn't give us any license to go back and retaliate towards them. I want to give you an example from third grade. I did go to third grade. It was a long time ago. Today I was like, fourth grade, third grade. No, I remember the desk I sat in. That was third grade. I was the girl whose mom always came on all the field trips. Is there anyone in here who's like, mom's like the class, you know, she's always there. And so my mom's just really nice. She's really nice. And so they'd always stick the kids who weren't so nice in my group, because I guess I dealt with it. And my mom was just really good to those kids. She'd just love on the kids. If they were having a bad day, she like didn't let it phase her. She just pushed right through. So there was this boy that was paired up with us. And meanwhile, I'm like, why can't I be with my best friend? Why do I have to be paired up with the kid with the bad attitude? And so then I get a bad attitude. Well, this kid kind of develops this crush on me. And so he starts like hanging out with me after the field trip, and then he starts drawing pictures, and then he passes little cute little poem notes things, and at this point I'm like, oh my gosh, just get away from me. And I wasn't so nice. I didn't really know how to handle that, and so I was mean. So suddenly, The boy who was interested in me came to school the next day and threatened to blow up my desk. And you're thinking, like, can a third grader really blow up? No, really. This kid, like, I mean, nowadays I would believe it because there's just so much that happens at such a young age. But he was so angry, and he was already had a lot of stuff that he was dealing with in his home life that it was serious enough for the school to take it, take knowledge of it. And so every day he'd have to go to the principal's office, and they would search his backpack before he could get to class because little Jen couldn't get her desk blown up. But I'm sharing this with you to show that there's this situation, and I kind of handled it a little wrong, just rejected him. I probably wasn't real nice to him because I was uncomfortable, so then I made him uncomfortable, and he was already alienated, so I was probably the only person in the class who was nice to him to begin with, and so he just retaliated, and he got angry, and those pictures weren't so pretty anymore. Like, I think they still came, but they just weren't flowers anymore, you know? I won't go into it, but he was an upset boy, and I realized, how could I have handled that wrong? Like, today I was thinking, why did I react that way? Was I embarrassed because the kid that no one likes now likes me and I have to be seeing with him at the all-day zoo field trip? Or am I thinking more about myself than this boy? And what could have happened if I would have responded differently? And so we laugh at those things, and it's funny to look back on and think that someone threatened to blow me up when I was 9 years old. But it's serious stuff to that boy. And if no one set him on the right track when he was 9, then who knows where he is today. And I had an opportunity back then to do something about it, and I didn't. So then that hurt people, I switched it around and said, loved people, love people. And so when we are loved, we give that love. And so that's what we've been talking about. That's the whole MO of why we're here, is that we receive the Lord's love so that we can be him to someone else and give it back out. And so there's hurts and things that come along, but that's what the Lord deals with. That's what he says, I want to take care of that right now so that you can be healed and whole and you can walk in the fullness that I've called you to. And so instead of thinking, I'm hurt, so I'm going to hurt, look at that person and say, why are they acting that way? Instead of automatically getting upset at them or automatically defending yourself, think, why is this person talking to me like this? There must be something else. There's always a root to someone's action. So instead of looking at the initial reaction, think about what's going on underneath that surface. Lord, how am I supposed to respond to this person to help them? Not just a defense mechanism. How am I going to take care of Jen? But how can I help this situation? And reach out. Start training yourself to look through Jesus' eyes to other people. Like, we automatically look at someone and say, oh, I don't really like that about them, or that's wrong. And we pick out these things that are negative before even saying, what's good about this person? What's positive about this person? What draws me to this person? And looking at the positive things in someone instead of always being like, ooh, and just walk the other way. Because that very person, you might be the one person that noticed them that day or that week, and that was for a reason. The Lord's pointing this person out to you to say, I want you to be nice to them. I want you to be their lab partner in science. I want you to be their homework buddy. I can't tell you how many people would come home from school with me because it was for homework. You know, I didn't want to be their best friend, but we were paired up in class, and they came to my house, and it was different for them. They're like, what's different about your home? And that was an opportunity for me to open up with them and share about the Lord, share about my family, because maybe they came from a broken home. And so as I talk about bullying, a lot of times we just think about that stereotypical person instead of just identifying maybe what's wrong with that person and how can I help them. And so a lot of this that I'm talking about tonight is more or less, what can we do to help others? And when we look at someone, different isn't always wrong. How many of you like to be different, unique, stand out? You don't want to blend in. That doesn't make it wrong. You might like your hair, like, parted this way, and I might like it parted that way. Is it messed up now? There's nothing wrong with that. You might like purple. I might not care for purple. You like purple. We know that, Kylie. But orange, there's things about you that are different. God created uniquely. There's no one like you. And so then when we look at someone else and they're different, that doesn't necessarily make them wrong. It doesn't make them off. It just makes them unique in their own way. And so when we look at people that are different, it helps to get in the perspective of, the Lord created that person just like he created me. And so I want to look at them the way he looks at them because he designed them that way. And who am I to say that he designed them wrong? Because I am not that person. I could never do that. because he's the creator, he fashions the image, and he's the one that designs the purpose. I'm just called to love that person no matter what I think or feel about a situation. So that's the bully. The next one I want to talk to you guys about is the victim. Also, you could call it the target. I'll read you a statistic. Estimated 200 million children and youth are being victimized by their peers right now. It's in every school, kindergarten, daycare. Where it has been investigated, it has been identified in every single one of those places. So they're in every place they've gone to research this, they have identified that it exists in that place. So that's even the little two-year-olds picking on each other. Now, whether they have that intent to harm, they're more or less just like, give me my toy. But at the same time, it starts young where it's like, I want something, I'm going to get it. And so it's everywhere. No one's exempt from it. And this includes even at your home, like we had said earlier, with siblings or with family members. This isn't just something that happens at the school or the daycare. If we could put up slide number one. It says, bullying is the most common danger that kids face today. It impacts one out of three kids. So if we went 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, and had all the ones stand up, that's the percentage at which it would affect the people around us. And teachers only catch 5% of the behavior. And that, like I described earlier, a lot of the different kinds of bullying isn't just visual to the eye. It could be a note that was passed. It could be something behind a corner. And so a lot of times it happens where the teachers don't see it. But I bet a lot of other students see it or they hear about it. It's just that no one tells the right person about it and they let it just go unsaid. Bullying can lead to serious problems such as anxiety, depression, physical ailments, and even suicide. I heard a story the other day about a 9-year-old boy who committed suicide. And in my mind, I'm thinking, a kid in elementary school was that tormented that he wanted to take his life? And then on the flip side, like, who could be that cruel to a 9-year-old boy? Like, no matter what he's done wrong, no matter how weird he might look to them, that doesn't mean that he's not worth living anymore. It doesn't mean that he doesn't have a purpose. And so sometimes we just look at the outward appearance of someone, or they might have said one thing wrong to us, and immediately we're judging them on that, or we're teasing them for it. And maybe we're joking. I know growing up, my brother would tease me. We shared a bathroom, so we'd get ready together, and he'd tease me, and he was ripped from the age of 2, you know, has a 6-pack, still does. And he'd be like, Jenny, can you put your shirt down? You know, he's like, I don't want to see your stomach. And so I grew up thinking that I was fat. Like, and in my head, you're thinking like, really? Like he just would comment on your stomach. But in a little girl's mind, when she's told something a few different times, it kind of gets ingrained in you. And you start to look at yourself that way. And he did not mean it. And to this day, he's like, Jenny, I love you. You're beautiful. I didn't mean to say that. I was just teasing you. But a lot of times if you have to follow something up with I'm teasing you, it probably shouldn't have been said in the first place. And so when we're talking about these things, about little 9-year-old boys who don't feel like they're worth anything to live anymore, I'm thinking, who's in their class with them that's there encouraging them? Who's in their immediate vicinity who can rescue that person and pull them out? Instead of just thinking about what did they do wrong, I'm thinking, like, who's going to be doing something right? And so we're going to get to that in a little bit. If you can go to the next slide. Who is a target for bullying? It's kids that are often alone or shy away from groups. People who appear weak, others may not perceive that they could stand up for themselves. Not involved in activities, again, because they're probably withdrawn. They appear different. They might be the new kid in school. They might have clothing that's different, or they might have to wear glasses. I wore headgear in 4th grade. That did not last long. I was like, I will not do this anymore. They had to change it. But I wore it to school. I mean, can you imagine? Has anybody ever had headgear in here? Or is that like way outdated now? Way outdated. Awesome. Nathan, yes. Okay, headgear. If you haven't seen it, it's a metal thing. It's in your mouth like a retainer. Comes out, wraps around your head, and has a strap that comes forward. It was ridiculous. And I remember going to school, I think it lasted 1 week, and I was like, that's it. I'll have crooked teeth. I will not go through school like this. But kids pick on them, and it's like, I'm paying thousands of dollars just trying to straighten my teeth, and you're laughing at me. But what makes it, I mean, it does look goofy, and I know it's just kind of does look weird, but why would you tease somebody? Like, is everything perfect about our own selves that we can go and point something out of someone else? No. Okay, next. I'm done with my soapbox. targets or jealousy. So sometimes it's, you have something that I want, and so I'm going to make you give it to me, or I'm going to make you feel bad for having it. And so these aren't necessarily things that you can even control. But if you're aware of those might be the potential targets, that might help you be aware of who to help pull out of those situations. If you notice someone who's by themselves or slumped down or not participating in activities, pull them in. Go up to them, encourage them, find out why they're there. I used to work on the, volunteer on the streets of Seattle, and I'd go down every other Saturday for 4 years, and I would serve the homeless. I was drawn to the people that were by themselves. You know, there's groups that would come through the soup line, but I was more like, why is that guy over there by the tree slumped over? Like, why is he not here? And that's who I went after. I'm like, I bring him his food. Here you go, sir. I'm seeking after him, just like Jesus says, I'll go after that one lost sheep. And so if we're him on this earth, we shouldn't be paying attention to all the crowds that are surrounding us as much as like, who's not right here that should be right here? Who do I need to go seek out? Who do I need to help to bring in? Has anybody seen the movie To Save a Life? Anybody heard of it? For those of you who haven't, it's a movie that came out a couple years ago, and it was about a popular boy who had a best friend who wasn't so popular. And so in elementary and junior high, they would hang out, and then as they got into high school, they'd hang out at home, but they wouldn't really acknowledge each other in public. And one of the boys had a limp because he dodged, he pushed his friend out of the way of a car, and so he actually got hit. And so now this kid had a limp, and he was limping through school, and people would tease him, and his friend wouldn't acknowledge him anymore. And so in ninth grade, he committed suicide, and it opened his best friend's mind. Like, he was right there next to me, and I didn't even defend him. And so the whole movie was about this popular kid who then realized, this really isn't working for me. Like, it might be fun, I might be cool, but someone very, very close to me just died because they didn't feel accepted, and I was their best friend. So what could I have done to help that person? And so it showed throughout the movie different things that kids do to each other and tease each other. And he started standing up for those kids. He started hanging out with the kids who didn't look like others. Or even the ones, you know, you might be like, well, there's the pot smokers. Well, maybe they don't know any different. Maybe their parents smoke pot and they've never been told not to. And so sometimes we see something that's wrong and we freak out and push them away instead of saying, maybe they're doing that because they don't know any different. Maybe there's no one there to train them to do that. And so instead of us just pushing someone even further away, I believe we're supposed to go and bring them out. Jesus hung out with those prostitutes. I'm not telling you to do that, okay? Just correction. But I am saying that he didn't let what other people think of him determine who he spent his time with. So I'm not telling you to go hang out with those people. So do not go home tonight and tell your parents that I said that. I'm using it as an example that hanging out with someone who's not cool, hanging out with someone who might be the mean one in the class or that no one else likes, it's wrong to not be around someone or to be nice to someone just because you think other people are going to tease you for it. Because that's letting man dictate what you do, not God. And so I wanted to talk a few things about how to keep from being that target, being a bully. Turn to Genesis 1:26. Yeah. Through all this that we've talked about, I want to focus on what the Word says about us. A lot of times we let people identify who we are. Like, I looked at myself a certain way because my brother teased me on something. But really, the Word is what defines me. It says, I'm made in His image. So in Genesis 26, it says, let us make human beings in our image to be like us. So God's saying, I put you here to be like me. And He created me. And so I have a purpose. And that's in Him, and that's what counts. Not what someone else says about me, not what someone defines me as, but what the Word defines me as. So if we're struggling with insecurity or we've been picked on, instead of focusing on what might have been said about us or what you might see in the mirror, you need to focus on who the Word says you are. And I wish I would have done this when I was younger. When I was in elementary school and kids would tease me, I had this bumps on my arms, and it was dry skin, and you're like, put lotion on it. There's something about it. I could not get rid of it. It was just these red little bumps. And kids would just tease me. They'd be like, you have a rash on your arm. That's disgusting. And I'm like, I can't do anything about it. I would do prescription lotions. I would do everything I could to get rid of it. And I couldn't. So then I wouldn't wear tank tops. I wouldn't wear t-shirts because I didn't want to show my arms. And it became something that I was so focused on because kids would point it out. But there's nothing I could do about that. And so I look back on those things and I would pay more attention to what they said about me than what the Lord says about me. I would let them dictate how I felt about myself instead of the Lord designed me. And the Lord believes I'm beautiful. And the Lord has a purpose for me. But instead, I dwell on the negative things that were said about me. So if there's things that have been said about you, whether you're not smart or you're not pretty or you don't have talent or you're never going to make it, those things aren't true because as soon as we open this up, we see what it says about us. And so we have to spend just as much time reading this as we spend listening to someone else. And correct that. You shouldn't even be listening to someone else. You shouldn't be surrounded with people who are tearing you down. And so if you are, you need to say, Lord, help me with the situation. If it's a sibling, you know, you're like, I can't really move out at 13. You know, addressing, you know, with your family about how you feel about those things. Because you need to get your mind renewed to who you really are. Because that's what's going to solve all this. You can have your parents stand up for you. You can tell your teacher someone did something wrong. But in the end, your teacher's not going to be there when you're 26. I don't have a mom that lives with me anymore. I have to stand up for myself. And it's a joke now. Last week at the seminar, they said, put your strongest foot forward, your strongest arm forward, point and say, that's enough. So last night, I was being teased again. So I put my strongest foot forward and I said, that's enough. And it was a joke in the house now. But it's like, they know, they're like, I'm sorry, Jen. But it's standing up for yourself in a way that you're not being aggressive, you're not retaliating, but you're just saying, hey, come on, knock it off. That's really not nice. And it just kind of turns the atmosphere, but I didn't make a big deal about it. It was funny, and I did bring it on myself yet again. But at the same time, I just said, hey, guys, let's cut it out. So there's simple ways to do that where you're not making this big thing blown out of proportion, but just kind of letting people know that something hurt your feelings. And then let's look at Psalms 139. Yeah. We were there a minute ago, but we're going to go to verse 13. You made all the delicate inner parts of my body. You knit me together in my mother's womb. Thank you for making me so wonderfully complex. Your workmanship is marvelous, and how well I know it. You watched me as I was being formed in utter seclusion, as I was woven together in the dark of the womb. You saw me before I was born. Every day of my life was recorded in your book, every moment laid out before a single day had passed. How precious are your thoughts about me, O God. They are innumerable. And I really like this scripture, how it talks about the Lord and how he viewed you. From the first moment of forming you, he loved you. From the first moment, he had little details that he was fashioning about you. And sometimes we pick ourselves apart, and I don't like this about me, and I don't like this about me. I wish I was more like her. I wish I had the talent that he had. I wish my hair looked better. I wish that I wasn't this size. And the Lord's like, I made you. You are exactly how I want you. And we pick ourselves apart, and then we pick someone else apart. And he's saying, I want you to love who you are. And so we need to look at this and say, Lord, I embrace who you made me to be. I have a purpose that only I can fulfill. Show me what that is so that I can walk with confidence. So I can walk knowing that even I don't look like that, even though I don't talk like that, this is how I'm supposed to look. This is how I'm supposed to talk. And walk in that confidence instead of always comparing yourself to someone else. Because that's not, you can't be that person. Any girls seen my best friend's wedding? Anybody? A few of you? The girl was like, creme brulee can never be Jell-O. And she goes, but I want to be Jell-O. And she's like, you can never be Jell-O. And the guys are like, what kind of movie is that? But the point, if you've seen it, it's cute. But the point of that is she's like, I want to be Jell-O. I want to be fun and silly and not complicated. And for any of you who know, it's a lot easier to make Jell-O than it is to make creme brulee. So that's kind of the point of this. And she's like, I want to be simple. I want to be easy. And the other girl's like, but I want to be complicated and classy and beautiful. And they're both just going back and forth. And so it's an analogy that I'm using, but it's the point of you always want to be something else. And so instead of spending all that energy trying to be something else, identify, Lord, what am I supposed to do? What does that look like? And ask him to renew your mind to that person so that you can be confident in it, so that you can enjoy your life, because he wants you to enjoy your life. You're not here to dread the very next day. You're here to enjoy it to the fullest and bring people alongside you so that they can enjoy it to the fullest. So we need to embrace who we are, because if you need to read this every day for the next 2 weeks just to get it in your head that I was made a certain way, then that's what you need to do to renew your mind to the truth of who you are. Let's look at Luke 10. Yeah. I'm just going to read it from New Living. It says, "Look, I have given you the authority over all the power of the enemy, and you can walk among snakes and scorpions and crush them. Nothing will injure you." Now, I have to renew my mind to this scripture, because the thought of walking among snakes and scorpions and crushing them is another reason I have videos made about me, because I freak out with those things. But how much more, like if I've told you guys the gecko story, you know, like I was trying to catch it and I'm squealing. I'm like, what is a gecko really going to do to me? It's going to do nothing to me. So why did I react that way? So then why, if someone says something to us or picks on someone else, why are we afraid of that person? It's because perfect love casts out all fear. So the more time we spend, Lord loves me, the Lord loves me. And it says in Proverbs, fearing man's a dangerous trap. So if I think about more what a man thinks about me, think about more of what my friends or peers think about me, and less what the Father thinks about me, my image is being built on something that's false. But if I spend more time on what he thinks about me and what he says about me and more time with him, then I'm identifying who I really am. And then that's going to start reflecting on how I act to someone else. And then I'm going to start listening to him more instead of, well, my friends told me I should do this. Well, have you asked the Lord what you should do about that? Have you asked him what he thinks about that or how to handle that situation? So many times we run to our best friend or we run to our parents, and that's great because they're the counsel that's in our lives and we're supposed to seek godly counsel. But a lot of times we head straight for that earthly person and we forget to go vertical. And how many know the higher you go in something, the farther you can see, the more you can see. But if I'm going horizontal looking at someone trying to get that input, I'm not going higher. And the more higher I go, the farther I can see, the more I can see, and the more I can know. And so we need to get our mind out of, well, this is what man thinks, this is what man does, and say, Lord, what do you think? What do you want me to do? It says, I see and do what I see my Father do. I say what I see my Father do. The more we spend with him, the more we know what those things are. If I can have slide number 6, please. These are some really simple suggestions. Easy adjustments. Talking about, yep, everybody is sitting up. That's exactly what I thought would happen. Look at that. That's beautiful. The one thing you can do naturally, like, it doesn't matter if someone's insecure, they don't know the Lord, there's some natural things they can do to just build their confidence. So don't slouch. I can't tell you how many times my shoulders would hunch forward and my mom would be like, Jen, stand up straight. But I'm taller than all the boys. Like, I was 3 inches taller in sixth grade and I'd play basketball with them and I was so much better than them. Little did I know, 2 years later, I had to hit them to get the ball because I was so small. But I would hunch over because I didn't want to stand out. And so now I have to train myself to sit up straight, to put your shoulders back. Suddenly I look more confident if I'm walking around like this than if I'm walking around like this. People are going to respect you with how you carry yourself. And that's not just standing. You guys, it was beautiful. You just suddenly like stood up straight and it's like the room just kind of changed a little. So if you stand up straight, put your shoulders back. And then the next one is win the staring contest. Look people in the eye when speaking. A lot of times if I go up to someone and I just kind of shy away, it's nice to meet you. It doesn't have confidence. But if I say, good to see you, Callie. And I look her straight in the eyes. There's no fear there, but there's fear if you're kind of shying away or afraid to look someone in the eye. So when you're going down the halls and you're walking past people up north, people bump into each other. They just like, they don't even say excuse me. It's just really rude. But down here, I've noticed people just kind of walk, step aside, let someone by. They're more considerate of others. So when you're walking, be aware of the people around you. Stand up straight. Look them in the eye. Just because someone might be cooler than you, just because you think they might be cooler than you, doesn't mean there's no reason to look them in the eye and to smile. There's no reason that you should think you're inferior to someone just because they've been titled class president or captain of the football team. That doesn't make someone any better than you. So you can carry yourself with confidence, standing up straight, looking them in the eye, and smiling. I get corrected so much. Jen, smile. And I'm like, I'm trying to smile. You have to train yourself. Just when you think I am standing up straight and I'm confident and smiling, like it feels over the top. That's when you're doing it right. Because if you're not quite sure, then it's probably subdued. If you go to take a journalism class or a TV class in college, they would tell you to be really cheesy and really enunciate your words to the point where you feel silly, and that's when you look normal on camera. And so a lot of times we have to train ourselves to smile. Turn to your neighbor and just smile. Not the cheesy, like, two-year-old smile, like, look, I know how to smile. Just smile at each other. Look them in the eye. Can you guys all turn to someone and look someone in the eye? Stare them down. No. And some of you are kind of like, okay, that's enough. That's too much staring. Yeah, am I right? See? So it's going to do this. Real quick, bring it back. Bring it back. I'm almost done. Practice this. If you're uncomfortable looking at the person next to you in the eye, shh. If you're uncomfortable even looking your friend in the eye, then you're probably uncomfortable looking a stranger in the eye. If you're always slouching, ask yourself why. Stand up straight. Do these natural things. And when you find yourself doing that, be like, I need to smile more. Or if you see someone walking down the hall, you realize they probably thought I was glaring at them. Just put a smile on your face. It's not going to hurt anybody to smile. Turn that frown upside down. Got it? So those are three simple things that you guys can start doing just to help build your confidence. A few other things, practicing asserting yourself, talking to people plainly. If you don't like confrontation, if you don't like to request things of people, next time your family wants to order pizza, you call and order the pizza. You guys are like, what, really? I can't tell you how many people struggle with talking on the phone, with just making a simple phone call. Or going up to a counter and being like, or to a waiter, you know what? I asked for well done and it's still bleeding. Can I please have a different steak? And someone's like, no, but I'll just eat it because I don't want to make them feel bad. Are you paying $20 for that steak? Yes. Are you going to eat that steak? No, it's still mooing. Okay. Then turn it, give it back to the kitchen, right? You need to practice asserting yourself because then when someone's, okay, bring it back. Shh. You need to practice asserting yourself because there's going to be other things in life that someone says to you or a situation at work that is uncomfortable, and you're not going to stand up for yourself or you're not going to stand up for what's right. So practicing with a waiter, practicing making a phone call to someone are ways to help assert yourself, to be confident, to be that person that you're wanting to be. Another thing is getting involved in activities and clubs. I'm not saying just go get in an activity just because it's what to do, but ask the Lord, is there some group that I need to join? Is there an activity? Is there a team that I need to be part of to help build those things? Because that's where you find teamwork. That's where you find unity. That's where you get comfortable being around people instead of secluding yourself. Confidence happens over a period of time, building yourself up, doing those things. So as you do some of these practical things, you're going to become more confident in yourself. You're going to start to look in the mirror and see yourself differently. And you'll see people respond to you differently. If you like yourself, people are going to like you. If you act like you don't like yourself, like I said, bring it on myself when I get picked on, that's when you start to feel made fun of or bullied. And so we need to put our shoulders back, walk confidently knowing I'm a child of God. No one can hurt me. I can walk on these snakes and serpents. And hopefully that's a metaphor. You know, I can just walk down the halls of school and people aren't going to make fun of me. But it starts with us being confident. Let's see. I'm going to skip that last slide and move on over into the last one, the observer. I heard a quote and it really stuck with me. It says, all that's necessary for evil to triumph is for good people to do nothing. I'm going to say it again. All that's necessary for evil to triumph is for good people to do nothing. And Edmund Burke said that. When there's things going on in this world, if there's someone in power in a political position that we don't like, but we didn't vote, we can't really talk about how we don't like that person in office because we didn't do anything on our part to make a change. So when we complain about things, we need to look and say, have I done anything to help the situation? If you take any training classes in corporate business offices, they'll say, if you have a problem and you identify a problem in the office, I want to know about it, but come to me with options for solutions. And so when we see problems, a lot of times we just shoot off the mouth, like this is wrong and this is wrong and I don't like this. But is there something that we're doing to help that? Or are we at least identifying, I maybe can't fix this problem, but I have an idea how that could happen. And so changing that perspective of, well, things are wrong and someone else needs to fix that. Well, sometimes things are wrong because the Lord told me to do that and I'm still sitting and I'm not doing anything about it. I told you an example earlier I would share about the brother, the parking lot incident. A couple weeks ago, I was at Albertsons, and I was just dropping off some clothes into the Goodwill bin. It was dark at night. I didn't even want to be there, but I went. And I looked over across the parking lot, and it wasn't near me. It was on the other side. And there's these two little boys, and I'm assuming they're brothers, and they were fighting. And you're thinking, oh, they pick on each other. I think they're probably, I'm going to guess between height and the way they're acting, probably 4 and 6 years old. The taller one, I'm going to assume is the older one, took the younger brother and gave him a wedgie. And you're thinking like, really? Okay, he like grabbed him, pulled him up to the point where he was holding his brother almost off the ground. And the little guy was just flailing and screaming and just like, get off of me. And mom's just loading the car, just doing nothing. And I'm like, what are you doing? Like, I just wanted to run across that parking lot and just like break the whole thing up. But I just stared. I'm like, can't believe those kids. Like, why is he doing that? And I can't believe that mom. Why isn't she doing anything about this? Well, God's like, I can't believe you. Why are you just staring? And so I did nothing, and I didn't think much about it at that time. But as I was starting to talk about this, because I'm thinking, I don't really experience bullying. It doesn't happen in our office. My roommates don't really bully me. They're just picking on me with no intent of harm, so it doesn't fit the definition. But it didn't really feel like it hit home. And I realized there's things that happen around us all the time, whether we're in the Walmart parking lot or we're at school or in the locker room. There's things happening around us, but we just stare. We don't do anything about it. And why is that? It's most likely fear of man. It's most likely, I don't want to be the next one that's picked on, so I'm just going to stand back and then I'm safe. And that's not the right approach to this. Let's turn to Luke 10:30.
Yeah.
Okay. A Jewish man was traveling on a trip from Jerusalem to Jericho, and he was attacked by bandits. They stripped him of his clothes and money, beat him up, and left him half dead beside the road. By chance, a Jewish priest came along, but saw the man lying there. He crossed over to the other side and passed by him. A temple assistant walked over and looked at him laying there and also passed by on the other side. Then a despised Samaritan came along, and he saw the man. He felt deep pity. Kneeling beside him, the Samaritan soothed his wounds with medicine and took care of him. The next day, he handed the innkeeper 2 pieces of silver and told him to take care of the man. If this bill runs higher than that, he said, I will pay the difference the next time I'm here. Now, which of these three would you say was a neighbor to the man who was attacked by the bandits? Jesus asked. The man replied, the one who showed him mercy. Jesus said, yes, now go and do the same. And so what I want to focus on is the yes and go do the same. And when we talk about neighbors, it doesn't have to be the person that you know that's sitting next to you. It doesn't have to be the person that lives next door to you. A neighbor is anybody that you come in contact with. God loves everybody. Not everyone knows about him yet. And so these are perfect opportunities to be that light. I wish I would have gone up to those boys. Maybe not like scolded their mom and yelled at them or anything, but be like, hey, buddy, just simmer down a little. Like, let the boy go. Be nice. Or, hey, mom, can I help you unload your groceries real quick? And then, oh, thank you so much. I've had such a hard day and dad's not home. I mean, there's reasons for everything. And so instead of saying, I don't have time for that, I don't even want to be here anyway, what can I do in that situation to help someone else? To get out of my time schedule or where I want to be and do what's beneficial for someone else. And so that's when we talked earlier about we're always concerned about our, I'm not saying always, but a lot of times we get so focused, and I'm a planner, so I get in the plan, and then something happens, and then I'm like, okay, do I do what I want to do, what they want to do? But the more we're led by the Lord, we're more available for someone else to meet their needs, to help them out, to not just be so concerned about how's my story going to end, how is it going to be written and finished, but how can I help someone with their story? How can I help correct it so that the ending is good, so they're not continuing down this path of destruction? Let's look at Isaiah 50, verse 4.
Yeah.
says, "The Lord God has given me the tongue of the learned, that I should know how to speak a word in season to him who is weary. He wakens me morning by morning to hear as the learned. The Lord has opened my ear, and I was not rebellious, nor did I turn away." So we hear the Lord, and he has given us those words to speak, to say to others. He's given us the ability to be him on this earth. And so we don't have to fear man. We don't have to wonder, I don't really know what to say. Because he's put it on the inside of us. He's just asking for us to be obedient, and our mouths will open. Just like when I come up here, I have notes, and there's a lot of things I've said that aren't on my notes. But before service, I prayed, "Lord, speak through me what you want spoken through." And so I rely on him. I don't rely on the black and white that's on this sheet. Again. I rely on him to speak through me. And there's things where it's like, nope, I didn't mention that because he didn't tell me to mention it. And there's other things where he's like, stop and say this. And so that's where we learn to hear his voice. And I'm just going to give you a few scriptures. I'm not going to read them. But John 10:4 says that my sheep hear my voice. And so the more time you spend with him, the more you're going to hear his voice. And then John 6:30 says, I only do what my Father does. So the more time we spend hearing his voice, the less time we hear strangers' voices or the enemy or the crowd that we're surrounded to. And the more apt we are to say, yes, Lord, yes, I will do that. I will listen to you. And so tonight, in closing, I wanted to just encourage you guys that whether you identified, hopefully hardly none of us identified with the bully as who we are, you know, no one would look at us as the bully. But if there's a few things in there that you're like, you know what, I really do need to adjust my attitude, or I do need to be a little less sarcastic, or stop picking on my brother, even though I'm joking over and over again, he might not feel like you're joking anymore. And so those are simple things that we can just adjust. Or if you are feeling like the victim, if you're sitting here going, there's some things I'm insecure about. There's some things that I want the Lord to work on me on the inside. That's what he wants to do. He's here to say, this is who you are. Read that Psalms 139. This is who you are. And then there's those of us who are witnesses. Now, we may have not witnessed something yet, but chances are sometime between now and the end of our lives, we will witness something that is an injustice, that's not right. And we have an opportunity to make a choice. Am I going to stand in the crowd, or am I going to do something about this for change? And so tonight I wanted to encourage you, if the band would come up. And they're like, yes, we're up. If you're identifying with any of these areas, whether it is there's insecurity and you look at yourself in a way that you're uncomfortable with, or people make you feel uncomfortable, or there's things you want to change about yourself and you just need the Lord to renew your mind to that, that's what he's here for, is to love you, to show you who you are in him so that you can be confident. And if there are some things, it says hurt people, if there's some hurts on the inside, if there's some anger that you're experiencing, the Lord wants to get rid of that. He doesn't want you feeling down and taking it out on other people. He wants you healed. He wants you whole. And then if you're fearing man, if there's some things that you're like, well, I don't do that. Last couple weeks ago when Cassandra said, why is it that we hesitate before we go to the altar? Why is it that when we're asked to do something, we wait for someone else to do it first before we do it? And the root of that is the fear of man. And so to get that sin consciousness out of our mind, that I am who I am in Christ, that's what he wants us to know. And I don't want you to leave here tonight feeling down, feeling insecure, or not worthy. I don't want you leaving here with anger and hurt, not because I don't want you to go hurt someone else, but I don't want you hurt anymore. I don't want you wishing that you could be different. And I don't want you fearing man, because I feared man, and I would think, oh, what do they think more than what does the Lord think? And so the more we put ourselves in the position to say, Lord, yield yourself. Like when we were worshiping earlier today and it says, do with me what you want. The more we view our lives as I am his servant, he has given me the gift of this life and I want to use it to my potential. That's a gift. And I want to use that gift to the best of my ability. And so if everyone could stand with me, the band's going to begin to play that last song. And if you identified with any of those things and you want to lay something down, or you just want to commit, Lord, I'm going to stand up for you. I want to be that person that stands up for others. I want to be confident. That's what this is for, is for us to just say, Lord, here I am. Do with me what you want. I am yours.
1440 is a ministry of Eagle Mountain Church. For more information, or if you have questions about what you have heard here, visit 1440.com or email staff@1440.com.